With Connecticut now in a state of emergency, it has all but impossible to ignore COVID-19, a novel coronavirus that is making thousands of people ill across the globe, with a mortality rate that makes it more dangerous than the regular flu. But as quickly as the virus is spreading, a lot of information, some good, some bad, is getting out there. So today we brought on Richard Matheny, Director of Health for the Quinnipiac Valley Health District, to help set the record straight. We'd like to thank our sponsors at Gateway and Housatonic Community Colleges. The Municipal Voice is the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities podcast in collaboration with WNHH LP 103.5 FM. I'm your host, Matt Ford. As always, be sure to give us a like and let us know what you're thinking in the comments below. CCM's Municipal Voice podcast continues to present a key forum on important state-local issues. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the consensus views of CCM or member municipal leaders. Richard Matheny, thanks for being here today.
You're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, so we're going to get right to it, talking about the coronavirus. But first, just a little bit on what you do and what the Quinnipiac Valley Health District does.
Well, I'm the Director of Health. Actually, I'm there on an interim basis until they hire a permanent replacement. The QVHD is a local health department. Mm-hmm. We provide services of all kinds, health education, environmental health services, outreach to the community in terms of working with the various agencies in the towns.
Okay.
We also are involved with emergency management kinds of activities, setting up clinics and those kind of things for emergencies.
Mm-hmm. And what towns does the Quinnipiac Valley Health District cover?
It covers Hamden, North Haven, Woodbridge, and Bethany.
Okay. So let's get into coronavirus. First of all, what is it?
What is the virus?
What is coronavirus?
Coronaviruses are a group of viruses that actually mostly live in animals. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are some human ones that cause common colds and that sort of thing. But this particular coronavirus, as well as I think the previous one, SARS, had an actual natural host in bats.
Okay.
And somehow or another, between bats and humans, there was another animal that got infected from the bat. And then that virus was changed just enough to make it infective to human beings. So that's where it came from. It's new.
So it needed that link of that other animal between the bat and humans
to link in between.
Change just enough to work.
That's right. Yeah. And they've been looking for what that animal might be, but I don't think they've actually discovered that yet.
Okay. And you were saying that SARS, which a lot of us remember, was a different variety of
a similar, variety
but
of a similar virus. Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
So if you people look to the CDC page on the virus, it seems that there's still not a full picture of how this virus spreads. Can you tell us about what are the most likely scenarios for transmission?
Yeah, actually, CDC does have interesting key points here. Right now, it's mostly hand to face, touching a contaminated surface, and then touching the face, nose, mouth, eyes.
Yeah.
It's amazing how, if you look at people, how often that happens during the course of a day.
When you try not to touch your face, that's when it becomes apparent how much you do it.
You're adjusting glasses, you do all sorts of things like that. And that's the primary route as far as we know. Secondarily is what's called droplet contamination. If you're within 6 feet of a person, there is a possibility of someone sneezing or coughing and having those droplets come in contact with you directly.
So literally being in, within the sneeze
zone. Sneeze cough area. Yeah, yeah. The recommended distances right now is 6 feet.
Okay.
Obviously, we have to judge that ourselves, what that means.
So it's not floating around in the air all the time. It's someone sneezes and a little something hits you.
Everything seems to show that it those droplets are heavy enough to actually gravity drop into the ground within a few feet.
And then they're hitting surfaces, and you touch the surface with your hand, and that's where it's happening?
That's right.
Okay.
So if someone's coughing on going up a staircase, as for instance, in a public building, well, those droplets could, in fact, get on the handrail.
The handrail, yep.
So that's the kind of thing we're talking about. So it's pretty much right now, it's direct hand-to-face.
Hand-to-face. So if it is hand-to-face, why are people wearing surgical masks?
Well, I'm not sure why they're doing it. People, they've seen people in China wearing them. In the United States, we view surgical masks really as a way of protecting other people from other people getting sick. In other words, if you were to go to a doctor's office and you were presenting symptoms of coughing and that sort of thing, the first thing the doctor would give you a mask to put on is to protect the doctor and the staff and everyone else in the waiting room, not protect you from them. So that's the purpose of a surgical mask.
So it doesn't keep you from getting it. It keeps other people from it if you have it, because it's physically blocking your sneezes and coughs. And
these surgical masks are not manufactured to protect you from these types of viruses.
Yeah.
They just help slow down the viruses leaving your mouth going to somebody else for a period of time. In order to protect yourself, you would have to use something called an N95 respirator, which is actually a respirator, not a mask.
Yeah.
And it needs to be tested correctly, fit tested to you personally.
Yeah.
And
so you can't just go pick up
they have
a
different
bunch
sizes.
Of those
you can't
store,
just go pick a bunch of them up. Number one, you can't find them, but if you could find them, you couldn't do it. And if you put it on, it would have to be really tested.
Yeah.
Make sure it fits tightly. Otherwise, there's no point in putting it on.
And in the end, you're more likely to get it from your hand.
Exactly. You don't want to keep putting it off and on. Obviously, hand washing is the key to all of this right now. But the thing about a respirator is that it does impede the flow of air. So you have to be a healthy person to do these too. So theoretically, you need to be medically cleared to use an N95 respirator.
Okay. It's not a toy.
It's not a toy. And it's not for everyone to use.
And it isn't really necessary.
Well, it's not going to help you.
For the general public.
General public. No.
Yeah.
If you were working in a hospital, yes, absolutely, you need them.
Yeah.
And
there's other diseases out there, certainly, that would be applicable to more so.
Absolutely. There are all kinds of those things, yes.
I know a lot of people talk about this, but how long should you wash your hands for?
20 seconds.
20 seconds. So if you can count to 20, there you go.
Yeah, people are singing happy birthday twice. Everyone has their own little song they sing back and forth, but... happy birthday twice is about 20 seconds, or if you're very good about counting, you know, counting. But the key to that is washing them correctly, making sure you scrub your fingernails and lather up and have, you know, lukewarm water or warm water so that you can, and then rinse carefully.
Yeah.
And then wipe on something clean.
Okay.
Just don't wipe on your pants, trousers.
Because your pants might already have something on it.
Exactly, right.
You say warm water soap. Does the marketing stuff out there selling antibacterial soap, does that do anything?
Not really.
It's just regular old hand soap.
Regular old hand soap.
What you need.
In order to be truly something that will protect you, it has to be like 60% alcohol.
Which isn't soap. It's just
it's not
putting rubbing alcohol all over you.
Well, that's what... well, you wouldn't want to do that either. That's what Purell is. It's 60, but it's mixed with something lanolin or something to make it easier to put on your skin. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than, just being a total liquid that just runs right off.
Yeah, not good for your skin, so you don't want to do that either.
So really the best option,
Purell or something like Purell that has at least 60% alcohol content, yes.
But washing your hands is even better than Purell, right?
Washing hands is always number one go-to because it helps you physically remove things from your hands.
Mm-hmm.
If you put a sanitizer on, all you're doing is rubbing something on top that's already there.
Yeah.
You'd always wash first and then sanitize. I mean, that's sort of the rule of thumb always.
Okay.
Whether you're cleaning a floor or your hands, I mean, it's the same thing.
And just as a follow-up, people should be washing their hands pretty regularly the rest of the time, right? This isn't now.
Absolutely.
It would help with any number of diseases.
It helps with all kinds of diseases. Yes, it does. Common colds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Enteric diseases like a Norwalk virus, norovirus, those kinds of things are, you know,
all in the
environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have varying times how long they live in on a surface exposed to air. So always wash hands is the number one message out there.
How long does it survive on surfaces?
I think they have not tested this particular virus.
Okay.
But in other circumstances, they have found these types of viruses. And it also depends on the surface. It depends whether it's in the sunlight. It depends on the temperature.
A lot of variables.
The moisture in the air. All those things have to be. Mm-hmm. Several days.
Okay.
2-3 days, I think, is what I keep hearing about. Maybe it could be more.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, this has not been extensively studied by for this particular virus. But
so it's
an
educated guess.
Educated guess, a couple days. But maybe longer.
In related to this, there's been travel restrictions to some countries so far, but as it continues to spread, do you think there'll be any kind of quarantines or travel restrictions within the U.S.?
I doubt it.
It
would just be too hard to enforce. I think maybe there'd be some suggestions, maybe not to travel to certain locations. I haven't seen that yet, but maybe that might come out. But no, I don't think any restrictions would be in place. I mean, I'm not an emergency management person. I'm just talking from a public health perspective.
Yeah.
I don't think that. I think we're going to find that this disease is community spread, and it's going to be everywhere very soon.
Mm-hmm.
All of our efforts right now is trying to mitigate the spread, to slow it down. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to slow it down right now.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, because what's the importance of slowing it down? Like, you can't stop it, but how does slowing it down help?
Well, it does. We don't know what effect, for instance, the changing of the seasons is going to have on mm-hmm. on this particular. Other viruses do slow down in warmer mm-hmm. months. This may not.
Mm-hmm.
But to slow it down means that it gives us everyone time to sort of like, okay, now we're going to do the day. How are we going to deal with this now that we don't mm-hmm. have people standing in line outside the emergency department now because okay. we're slowing it down. People are staying home. So it gives everybody an opportunity to say, okay, now how are we going to, what are we going to do next? Mm-hmm. We won't have that gun to the head, so to speak, of, mm-hmm. oh my God, we got to do something right now because so many people are getting yeah. sick. So if they stay at home or we're slowing it down, it just gives everyone time to breathe.
Okay.
I don't mean that in any ironic sense, but yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily, wouldn't stop everyone from getting it, but it gives the authorities, the healthcare providers, just
more
time to deal with them as they come rather than everyone showing up all at once.
That's one answer, and the other one is it just, you know, it keeps people safer longer. That's
yeah.
the other thing. Pardon me. Yes. So that's primarily the reason for doing it, yes.
Okay. So we don't want to scare anybody about this, but, you know, we're in Connecticut. Here in New Haven, we're connected to New York City by the train. Should
yes.
people be worried about traveling on trains, subways? There are cases now in New York City.
I know. Well, it's always a good idea to be concerned. I don't know that we're at the stage right now where we tell people not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that may be coming.
Yeah.
Because we're basically saying the same thing. We're saying people don't get into confined spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get too close to people who are more than 6 feet away. So that kind of defines spaces a lot. And,
yeah. And saying you're on a train, you're confined, you're
so
sitting next to people.
I'm in a position to say whether or not that's going to take place. That mm-hmm. would be a statewide decision made by the governor, but
yeah.
I'm sure they're thinking about it.
Yeah. And if it's an optional kind of thing, like, oh, do I just want to go on a jaunt this weekend? Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe I want to think about it a little bit.
Yeah. You know, we're trying to tell people that we're looking at this sort of a three-tier structure,
mm-hmm.
an individual, a family unit, and then the community,
mm-hmm.
and then the state, of course.
Yep.
So we're trying to tell people to take care of themselves, make mm-hmm. the decision to take care of themselves, thinking about making themselves, they don't expose themselves unnecessarily,
mm-hmm.
engage in healthy behaviors, hand wash, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. And then the family itself, help each other
yeah.
to do the same thing. If someone gets ill, then, you know, try to take care of them in such a way as to try not to spread it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the community itself we're here to try to also offer some sort of other kinds of guidance and assistance. So that's mm-hmm. sort of, I think, the structure we're looking at.
Yeah. And when you talk about family and community and stuff, I think one of the points that's important is some people say, you know, I'm young, I'm healthy, this isn't going to kill me, but it's also about not spreading it around
exactly.
to elderly people who might not be able to handle it.
Precisely so.
It's being concerned for others as well as yourself.
Right. It's sort of played out that 80% of the people who have this disease
mm-hmm.
have mild or no symptoms,
mm-hmm.
and but they're still quite capable of shedding the virus.
Yeah.
And so, yes, people have to consider other people in their environments, their family members, et cetera,
yeah.
et cetera, and in their behaviors, and to consider the fact that they, in fact, may be spreading this. So try to, you know, work within the family unit itself to minimize that.
Yeah.
Especially if you have an elderly person at home.
Yeah, like some nursing homes and stuff have asked people to stop coming to visit because they don't want it brought in
population. I think they're actually taking temperatures as of today or yesterday.
Like before you come in and visit.
Before you can go ahead and come in and visit, yeah.
Yeah, because it's got a very
because
vulnerable
they're a
population.
Very vulnerable population, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One question that has popped up is if someone is self-isolating, as they term it, or under quarantine, how should they get their food necessities?
Right, it's a very good question. Hopefully, they have a family that can help them do that.
Mm-hmm.
and I think at some point in time, if someone really does not have food, and also the issue of medications is another thing that's coming up that the I think that the municipalities are going to have to sort of give some thought to how they may be able to assist those residents in getting that getting those badly needed resources. I don't know that there's an answer yet right now, but I know they're going to plan for it because right now we don't have any kind of a mass, you know, everyone stay home kind of a order given out yet. But down the road, that maybe has to be dealt with, yes.
Yeah. You mentioned municipalities, towns. What should local governments kind of be doing at this point?
Well, I think in our area, they're all doing it. They're they're meeting. They're working out the talking points. They're trying to... each of the town departments are working with the people that they serve, senior centers, school systems, the town hall itself, how you structure meetings in the future. What are you going to do about voting?
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to stay 6 feet away from someone, well, you know, how's that work in a voting line?
Yeah.
So all those things are being discussed. And I have to say that it's been my experience so far in our four towns, the town governments and the boards of education have been very proactive in getting their employees together and trying to come up with consistent messaging and plan for various
Within various your district, at least, you're feeling pretty good about how towns are starting to deal with this. And
the QVH towns are doing very well, as far as I can see, yes.
That's great. And I'm pretty sure we were looking in the governor's announcement, the emergency declaration, and in there it does also give some authority to the towns to kind of decide what's right for their community.
That's correct.
So that there is definitely a role for municipal government in the decisions around closures and that sort of thing.
Yeah, unless the governor comes up with a statewide announcement of certain actions, local governments are responsible for taking care of their citizens, and the same for local health departments until we get guidance otherwise.
So you're kind of in the front lines of this.
Local health departments are actually really the ones that actually have the authority to actually issue quarantine orders.
Okay.
Unless there's a declared emergency by the governor. So these are things that we're involved very much with that. So.
What kind of treatment options are there so far?
None.
Nothing to do yet.
Other than lots of fluids, bed rest. You know,
like you would do for...
Try to take something to keep your temperature down. Those the normal things you would do when you're homesick. Really.
But there's...
There are no antivirals that have been tested and approved, and the vaccines.
Probably
2 years down the road. By the time they get it manufactured and out to be distributed.
This particular one will be passed.
Yeah.
So this is all happening pretty fast right now. You know, the news kind of changes day
every
to day.
Every day.
Yeah. Carl Bergstrom, a coronavirus expert, said that without immediate action, we can overwhelm the system with too many people being infected at once. Control measures, he cites, are limiting large gatherings, minimizing travel, which the government has done with declaration of emergency. You know, we support these efforts, but from a public health standpoint, can you tell what impact this might have on our system?
Well, the obvious, if we have a mass situation where we have mass voluntarily quarantining, and there are all kinds of even legal implications for that, for municipalities in particular. Because once those former orders are declared, there are certain responsibilities under the law the towns are responsible for, such as making sure people have food, such as making sure they have medications, and any other essential materials for health life support systems. People are home on life support systems sometimes and need to have oxygen, need to have all these things brought to them. So that is, by law, is a requirement for the town governments to be ready to handle. So,
and that's if they declare it, or even if the state does it for the whole?
If the state declares an emergency like that, then the local governments are obligated to.
It's a mandate. Okay.
Yeah.
In your role as Director of Health for the Quinnipiac Valley Health District, what actions are you taking?
Well, we are trying to disseminate useful and rational and actionable information to people. We're trying to direct people to the CDC website if they have access to it, and also the World Health Organization website if they have access to it, and the Connecticut Department of Emergency Management has a website as well, as well as the Department of Public Health. There's a lot of information out there if you go seek it. We are also providing education materials, posters, and that sort of thing for the school systems.
Okay.
So they can explain hand washing more to the school children. We have giving them some posters. We've met with them. We're meeting with the town government, so we're sitting down to sort of strategize with them about what would be the most effective course of action to take on that particular day and moving forward. So that our role really is to try to provide, we try to be the calm presence in the room, I guess is what I'm hoping that we are going to be, yes.
And you're not the only health district around. There's others in Connecticut. Are you collaborating with them on this?
Yes, actually, the Department of Emergency Management has divided the state of Connecticut up into regions, and each region has what is called an essential service function, and they're numbered 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. Health is essential service function number 8, and in Region 2, which is the area around New Haven, we've been meeting already and had actually had a conference call this morning. With hospitals and other healthcare organizations and health departments. So we are meeting. We met last week. So we're trying to come up with common messaging. We're trying to come up with common approaches to common problems.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's ongoing. We're talking and we're ongoing to try to do this, the same job as well as we can.
All right. Just going to let everyone know that you are listening to WNHH LP 103.5 FM, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven. We are streaming live on TuneIn Radio and newhavenindependent.org. We're also streaming live on Facebook Live. Just go to facebook.com/New Haven Independent. So what else we have going on? Is there any, what kind of misinformation, what's the biggest piece of misinformation you've been hearing that you would like to disprove right now?
Well, I've heard everything from, you know, we've heard everything from people crying, calling us crying because they're so concerned about themselves and their family. And the other end of the spectrum, I've walked in on people yelling at the television that this is nothing but a hoax. So there's a spectrum there. We try to tell people on both ends that it's, number one, this is a serious illness that must be taken seriously.
Yeah. It's not the same as a regular flu.
It's not the same as a regular flu. And, you know, this information is based on what we've learned to date from China to Italy to Iran to Korea to the United States and elsewhere. It's very rational and it's factual information.
Yeah,
and that people need to have trust that that's true. I mean, we're not making any of this stuff. We're trying to help people and we're trying to give them the correct information and direct them to the sources of information that will give them factual data.
Well, that's good. On a different note, we had a very mild winter. Probably didn't kill a lot of the bugs like it usually does when you get extreme cold. Should people in Connecticut be concerned for the warmer months now? You know, we say sometimes the warmer months, things like corona tend to go away, but the bugs come back. Should we be worried about things like Lyme disease? And is EEE likely to pop up again in the warm months?
Well, EEE won't pop up till the end of the summer because it takes a while for it to get cycle through the bird populations and build up.
So that's like an annual kind of cycle kind of
well,
based on the season?
Yeah, normally it depends on the season, of course, but EEs are actually spread by a specific type of mosquito.
Okay.
And it lives in swamps and tree holes. You just call them swamp hole mosquitoes. But they're very specific. They don't breed in your gutters or any of that kind of thing. So they normally feed on birds.
Okay.
That's their normal host. And it takes a while for the birds to get ill and pass them to mosquitoes and build up the population of infected mosquitoes.
Okay.
And then that spills over to horses and humans. But it's towards the end of the summer, almost always in the fall, September, August. Ticks, on the other hand, they're probably crawling around right now because it's nice and warm.
They're waking up.
They've been living in the leaf litter and all kinds of stuff like that. So, yeah, I think ticks will be out.
And probably right larger now. Numbers than
Earlier, for sure.
Earlier, okay.
Whether it's larger numbers or not, I don't know. You'd have to talk to the entomologist, I'm sorry, at the egg station. But, yeah, they're going to be active.
All right. So what do you think about some of the closures that are going on, events? Is that important? Like they talk about not having gatherings of more than 100 people. How does that affect things?
Well, again, we're just trying to mitigate and slow down the transmission of the virus because as we discussed already, there are lots of people walking around right now who have it and don't know they have it. So if you limit the number of possible exposures by limiting those large scale events, it does slow down the spread of the virus.
So it's about the numbers. Like even in the small groups, someone might still get it, but then it's
but
only
you,
it's a group of people that know
lots of people at the same time.
So 100 people have 20 friends each.
Exactly, it can go exponentially.
Yeah,
spread throughout the population. So the larger groups we try to discourage and cancel right now. We're talking about with school systems about field trips, as a for instance, whether or not they're appropriate in certain locations. And that's going to be visited within the next couple of weeks. I'm certain of that.
Yeah.
Decisions are going to have to be made about whether that's all these efforts are to try to mitigate the spread of the virus in the population, basically. So if you, whatever steps you can take to say, okay, we've done everything we can here in advance of people being sick, of stopping people from getting sick. I think that's the underlying principle.
Yeah. And related to that, I know some people right now are very upset about the cancellation of sporting events.
I know. Okay.
Same idea. Large crowd, it would just...
Large crowd, you can't keep 6 feet away. I mean, most sporting events I've been to, even there are ones that are outside, you're sitting on a bench right next to somebody. Theoretically, outside, there's, you know, you should not in a confined space, but you're still within 6 feet of somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult because this is going to be disruptive to our way of life for quite some time, I think. And we're slow to come to terms with that. We all are because, you know, like, really, do we have to do that? And I think the answer is, yeah, you're probably going to have to do that.
Yeah. And I know right now the governor has kind of shut off things for the state, more than 100 people, till April 30th. Do you think this is all going to be done by April 30th?
I don't think anybody knows. I think at April 30th, you're going to come up and we're going to sit down and reevaluate things.
And go from there.
I think they're taking a 2 week time period because that's more or less the time period of a person incubating the virus and becoming ill and then getting better.
If you were around someone, you think you might have been exposed.
So that 2 week period is sort of
in the clear.
That's the kind of the timeline we're talking about right now. But I think after 2 weeks, everyone's going to sit down and evaluate where we are and make a decision going forward from there. I mean, I don't know what else you can do, really.
Yeah. And just back to the school stuff quickly. I know with this particular one, for some reason, children don't seem to get as sick or whatever. But if they're,
they can
still spread it. Right?
They can bring it to school.
So even if they're not necessarily feeling awfully terribly sick themselves, they could still spread that to someone else that might have more problems with it.
Correct. They could spread it to each other, of course. And you always worry about, so far, children have seemed to have not done badly with this virus. That's all been sort of verified by so far observations. But you always have to worry about, there are children in the school system that have immune compromised situations, special needs children, et cetera. So you have to worry about them in particular. And then, of course, the staff.
Yeah, teachers.
Teachers,
staff.
And yeah. So those decisions are going to have to be made about that because, you know, what will be the purpose of the closure? And that is, again, trying not to spread the virus to healthy people. And those are hard decisions to make, and they're going to be made within the next week, I'm guessing.
You think the next week some hard choices are going to have to be made around the state?
I think so, yeah.
Because as of right now, we know of 2 cases in the state. Is that right?
We know of 2, yes.
But... chances are there's other cases we just don't know about yet.
That would be my supposition. Yes.
Yeah.
The problem is we can't test. There's not enough testing capacity to test people. Right now, they're still being restricted to people who really are ill. I mean, if you're just sort of feeling not so great, but you don't know yet whether you have the virus, there's no way of testing you to find out if that's the case. And so you're still walking around potentially spreading the virus. So that's sort of the weak link in all of this.
Yeah. Just one other thing with the weather warming up, people are going to want to be outside more. If you're outside going for a hike, whatever, should you be worried about anything? Or as long as there's not other people around, you're probably doing all right.
Stay 6 feet away from someone you don't want to be and go out and enjoy yourself.
So if you're on a hike on a trail by yourself, you're good.
Well, you don't have to be by yourself, but yeah, you have to use reasonable common sense about these things. Okay. If you're in a large group, then maybe you only think it through a little bit. But if you're by yourself or you're with your family member or whatever, go have fun. Enjoy yourself.
Sounds good. Sure. So I know you got a lot going on right now, pretty busy. Yep. So we're going to let you go soon. But is there any kind of closing message you would like to get out to the people there?
Yes, I know that the joke is about government's here to help you, but government really is here to help you. And we really want to provide you with the rational and accurate information that you may not be getting from other social media sources. So yeah. I would encourage people to keep in contact with their local government office buildings and their mayors and first selectmen and their health departments, and also check online for CDC, et cetera, to get up-to-date information.
So the CDC's website?
It has coronavirus right on the head. CDC.gov, and right in the first page, it said coronavirus. Mm-hmm. You click right on that, and there's tons of information.
Is there a good source for more Connecticut information that people should also check out?
I haven't been to the state of Connecticut website itself, but I know the Department of Emergency Management, Homeland Services has a website, and the Department of Public Health has one as well. Mm-hmm. And both of these have information, and also the Department of Education has one.
Okay.
So all those have...
So there's a lot of good sources of information out there that are better than just looking at your Facebook feed or something.
Yeah, don't go look at Facebook feed.
Don't make health choices based on memes.
No, don't do that.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank our guest, Richard Matheny. Thanks to our sponsors at Gateway Community College and Housatonic Community College. Learn more at gatewayuct.edu and housatonic.edu. The Municipal Voice is a co-production by CCM and WNHH 103.5 FM. Kevin Maloney is our executive producer. Christopher Gilson is our producer. Harry Draz is on the boards. And I'm Matt Ford, your host. Be sure to check out our Facebook page and give us a like. And watch out for our CCM chat series on our Facebook page.